Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, a writer and researcher at MLB.com, joined by Matt Myers, MLB.com national content editor. Today is Wednesday, January 26th, 2022, and we have a Hall of Famer. The writers have inducted David Ortiz to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is not going to be the only member of the class of 2022. There are six other members we talked about a couple times over the last few weeks. He'll be joining names like Minnie Minoso and Gil Hodges and Buck O'Neill and all the other names we talked about from the Eric committees. But the news of the day that everybody's interested in is the writers put in David Ortiz on the first ballot. Obviously, there's some larger names who didn't get in. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what's interesting to us and what this might mean for the future. But before we get into Ortiz, Matt, I want to ask you something. I want to offer a thought, and I feel like you might disagree with me on this. I know everybody hates Hall of Fame season increasingly. It's frustrating and it's infuriating and no one is happy in the end. But I kind of love it. They're annoying arguments, and I think this year definitely marks like a turning point in how those arguments are going to change in the future for sure. But I love arguing about, for some guys it's baseball reasons, like Scott Rolen and Bobby Abreu. For some guys it's certainly not baseball reasons, but it's a good thing to pay attention to in the middle of January. Like, I know nothing is happening in baseball right now, but it's January 26th. That's pretty much true every January in terms of baseball. I like having this to focus on. And I don't know, I just love arguing with people about baseball. And I totally understand if you might feel the opposite and say, no, this is just infuriating and I'm glad we're done with this for the year.
I don't fully disagree. I mean, I used to really like Hall of Fame debates. I think like the whole Bonds-Clemens thing has just been sort of exhausting, and I'm just so bored of it. I'm kind of glad they're off the ballot, because to see people still kind of like putting out like hot takes of like, here's why Bond should be in the Hall of Fame. It's like, yeah, I get it, but like, we've been doing this for 10 years. It's been very obvious for a few years now they were not going to get in by the writers, and like, it's just sort of like a boring discussion from my perspective. I guess the one thing I will say is like, I'm looking forward to the debates going forward, because like, these guys will be off. So I'm hoping that like, granted, I'm not sure the Carlos Beltran discourse is going to be much better next year, but I'm really glad that we can focus more on what happened on the field. I think that's more of an interesting debate. Like our last podcast, it was like fun to talk about these guys, like comparing, Roland to Abreu to Ortiz. And like, we're really just mostly talking about like baseball players and the standards of the Hall of Fame. And I think that's great. One thing I don't, honestly, and this is where I might be on the minority, and you may have heard me say this before, either on this podcast or in conversation, I have nothing but respect for the effort that like Ryan Thibodeau and the Tracker people have put in to these efforts. And I think that, the public ballots are out there. I think it's cool that that someone has taken the time to do this. I think it's bad for the process. It takes away any suspense, or most of the suspense from the process for me. I wish people did not publish their ballots in advance. I think it'd be more fun if we had absolutely no idea where anyone stood and the announcement came. It was like, okay, who's going to get in? Like going in, we basically knew for sure for weeks. It was like, okay, it's going to be Ortiz and it's going to be close. And like, there was some suspense at least, but like at the same time, there was no suspense on anything else. And I think to me, that's actually kind of hurt the process.
I think I disagree with you. I think I like that it's out there. I was actually part of the group that voted to ask the Hall to force all votes to be public, and the Hall said no. So I guess
we could do it like we do like the awards, where it's ballots are made public after the fact. I'm not saying keep them private. I'm saying don't reveal them in advance to take away the suspense of the announcement. That's my point, to be clear.
That's fair. And for the record, I think the writers messed up a little bit here by not putting in Bonds and Clemens. But to be clear, the Hall of Fame did not want them in, right? I thought this was a really interesting fact that Jason Stark had at The Athletic, and I don't know if you saw this already. He looked at, he split up the writers, the voters, in terms of when they obtained their vote. Like, some of them have been voting for decades, and some of them are brand new. Of the voters who gained their vote just in the last 5 years, 86% voted for Bonds and Clemens, which pretty much makes it clear that when the Hall changed the length of eligibility from 15 years to 10 years in the middle of their candidacies, they did not want Bonds and Clemens to get in. I don't know. I feel like everyone's killing the writers, and I'm not unbiased here and fine, but the Hall did not want them in, and the players would not vote for them. We'll get to what's going to happen in the future. I'm with you that I'm glad that those guys are off the ballot. I'm disappointed that this is the way it ended. I think baseball is worse off for it. But I'm much more excited to talk about, yeah, you're right, Carlos Beltran next year. We should talk about David Ortiz for a minute, though. David Ortiz is a Hall of Famer. Were you surprised? I thought he was going to get in, but I kind of felt like I was in the minority there. I think most people thought he wouldn't.
Yeah, looking at the public tracking, you know, and I did look, you know, yesterday, and it going into, like, based on, like, the latest count that was public, he needed, like, to be named on 66% of private ballots, more than 66% of private ballots to be inducted. And I thought he was going to fall short. I actually thought he was going to fall slightly short. I was a little surprised because usually the private ballots are more small hall people. That's just generally been the case where they might vote for only two or three people, where the public ballots are people who are more likely to vote for 8 to 10. And Ortiz is a unique case, right? Because he has a lot of the soft factors that a lot of, like, more old school people generally like in terms of, you know, postseason heroics, you know, really passing the fame test kind of thing. On the flip side, he had the, you know, connection to a PED test and the fact that he was a DH only. So he was a unique case. So I wouldn't say I was surprised, but I was expecting him to end up in, like, the 72-73% range. But obviously I was a little bit off, and I was, you know, had I been voting this year, I would have voted for him. So I was glad to see him get the induction.
I've seen a number of people have a take that I find really bothersome, and that is that, oh, he was terrible with the Twins. He was bad in his 6 years there, and then he went to the Red Sox, and he magically got better. And it's like, hold on a second. When he was with the Twins, he had a 108 OPS plus, where 100 is average. So I know we weren't using OPS plus in those days, right? But it was slightly above average. His last year there, he had 20 homers and a 500 slugging percentage. Like, it's infuriating to me that people think he only got good in Boston. And I'm pretty sure the last time we did a podcast, I had a quote from him where he's like, yeah, in Minnesota, they wanted me to try to hit the ball to all fields. And in Boston, they basically just wanted me to hit the hell out of the ball. It's like, okay, cool.
It's a weird one. So, like, he was, like, the Twins at that time were seen as kind of, like, they were sort of, like, at the time in the, like, in the baseball discussion, in the baseball universe, they were sort of, like, the A's were the money ball team. They were, like, the cool forward-thinking team. And then they were, like, the Twins were their small market counterpart who were winning despite playing more of a traditional pitch to contact kind of way with a lot of guys. You know, they didn't have a lot of 3-2 outcomes hitters. And, like, Ortiz ran against everything else. The Twins at that time were, like, you know, Doug Minkiewicz and Jock Jones and AJ Pierzynski. This was before, I mean, Joe Bauer was drafted in 2001. This was, like, before Joe Mauer was, like, part of the team. But in 2002, his last year there, the Twins won 94 games and won their division by 13 games. So it was, like, they had a lot of benefit of the doubt in terms of, like, how they ran their team. And it was definitely considered, like, the old school scouting organization. Now, I think probably in retrospect, we were a little blinded by the fact that, like, the rest of the AL Central was just terrible at the time. And it was actually pretty, the Tigers won 55 games that year. The Royals won 62 games that year. Like, it was a really bad division. So I think the Twins were just, like, the best of a bad group and probably were a little bit behind the times in ways we didn't fully realize because they were winning a weak division. And man, how many Hall of Famers were released in their 20s? Right? Like, David Ortiz, like, is he the only Hall of Fame ever to sort of, like, fit that bill? It's kind of crazy, right?
I don't have a good answer to that, but I'm positive he is not the only one, right? There had to be somebody who was, like, you know, DFA'd, not traded. Like, lots of guys have been traded, you know, like Jeff Bagwell is a minor leaguer who got traded. And I'm sure now I want to know, and I'm stalling because I'm trying to think of somebody and I really can't. But now when we're done, I'm going to have to go look that up and maybe I'll see if I can find that out and tweet it. Because I'm like, I'm sure that has happened. And it's probably, you know what I'm going to guess? I'm going to guess it's released in a way that's not the kind of released that we think of now. It was probably someone who, like, I don't know, had a tryout in the 1930s and played like a week with the Tigers D League team or something, and they got cut. Is that that's probably what it's going to be?
Trevor Hoffman was in the expansion draft, so there's that. One other point I'll make about David Ortiz, and a lot of people forget, is he actually came up with the Mariners, and there's actually a great story that we ran in 2020 on MILB.com that we resurfaced, written by Rob Terranova. That so you should check it out on the site today. Basically about how in 1996, when he was in low A in the Mariners system, and this was like the peak of the Mariners being like cool with Griffey and like young A-Rod, he was playing in low A and like the Mariners came through. This used to happen a lot in like the 80s and 90s, where like the major league club would go play an exhibition game at an affiliate to try and like drum up interest, sell tickets and get people excited in the team. And so they went, the Mariners went to this, the low A affiliate to play a game, and it rained terribly and the drainage was terrible. And Lou Piniella, the Mariners manager at the time, was like, we're not playing on this field. Like, sorry, I'm not putting Ken Griffey Jr. out on this like low A field and playing this game. So instead of playing a game, they decided to do a home run derby, which actually was probably cooler because like instead of like Ken Griffey taking one at bat and like leaving and maybe never getting the ball hit to him, these like fans in this low A park got to watch Griffey, A-Rod, and Dan Wilson, who had just been an all-star, by the way, for the one time in his career, take a home run derby against the Mariners low A affiliate. And apparently, according to legend, a young David Ortiz like blew them all away in this home run derby, which is pretty cool.
I've never heard that story before, and I kind of love it. All right, a fond farewell. Here's a couple of guys who didn't make the 5%, and they are done and won't be coming back. Joe Nathan, I was a little surprised, didn't get the 5%. Tim Hudson, Tim Lincecum, Ryan Howard, Mark Teixeira, Justin Morneau, Jonathan Papelbon, AJ Pierzynski, Carl Crawford, and Jake Peavy. I have Prince Fielder on my list. I don't even remember him being on the eligible list, but I think maybe I typoed that. No, he was there. He got two votes for Prince Fielder. Okay. And then coming back next year, Scott Rolen, Todd Helton, Billy Wagner, Andrew Jones, Gary Sheffield, Alex Rodriguez, Jeff Kent, Manny Ramirez, Omar Vizquel, Andy Pettit, Jimmy Rollins, Bobby Abreu, Mark Burley, and Torrey Hunter. We are going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the guys who are coming back next year who are very clearly trending towards induction. We're back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast, Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. We had a couple of interesting names who didn't make it into the Hall of Fame on the ballot this week, but also are still going to be on next year. There are three names I want to point out who are on a clear upward trajectory, and I'm interested to hear, Matt, if and when you think these three guys make it in. Scott Rolen has 5 years left on his tenure maximum, and he has gone in his 5 years from 10% in his first year on the ballot up and up and up and up, 63% this time. Todd Helton has 6 years left. He went from 17% his first time up and up and up to 52%. Billy Wagner's 3 years left. He was a steady 11% for the first couple of years, 51% this last time, other than Bonds and Clemens and Curt Schilling. Everyone to ever get to 50% has now made it into the Hall of Fame. I don't want to say Scott Rolen's a slam dunk, but it seems pretty close. Like, you're going to have this logjam off the ballot next year. I think I'd be almost stunned if he does not get in next year.
I think that's right. His rise has been remarkable and very steady, as you noted. And with Carlos Beltran, the only sort of like debatable Hall of Famer joining the ballot next year, I think there's going to be there's always just like a little bit of feeling of like, despite the fact that there are some years where no one gets in, I think that there's always a feeling of like, hey, it's probably a good idea if we induct someone. And I think that like Rolen is going to be the natural choice for like support to gravitate towards him. And I think that like, it seems like he will probably get there, if not next year, the year after. So I think it's certainly possible next year that like he won't quite get there, because will be another big jump, but I think it's going to happen.
I think so too. Todd Helton has 6 years left. He's gone from 17% to 29% to 45% to 52%. His big sticking point, I think, is that he played in Coors Field. I mean, we went through each of these guys a couple weeks ago. I've had no issue with him being a Coors Field guy, but I'm trying to remember. He was the one we differed on, right? Wasn't he the guy where I said, yes, I'd vote him in, and you said no?
I think so. I mean, again, like, it's one of those where saying it now on a podcast, I kind of go back and forth. If I had to, if I was actually voting and had to sit down, I think I would think long and hard. And again, it would also depend on, the ballot. Like, when I was looking at the ballot this year and doing a fictional ballot with a 10-person limit, it's a tough thing. But like, thinking as a voter next year, if I was a voter next year with, so many of these folks off the ballot and they're not really much of a logjam, I think I'd be way more likely to cast a ballot for Helton.
And Billy Wagner has gone from, this is a pretty fun trajectory, 11%, 10%, 11%, 17%, 32%, 46%, 51%. I have long said that I don't really see a reason why Trevor Hoffman should have been a slam dunk. and Billy Wagner should lag so far behind. Like, the only reason is saves, and I don't care about saves. And it's starting to feel like people are starting to come in. I don't have the numbers in front of me. This isn't really relevant to, you know, him being a Hall of Famer, but our friends Jake and Jordan, who write for Cespedes Family Barbecue, pulled up Billy Wagner's college numbers, and they're like obscene. They are the greatest numbers like in the history of college baseball, where if I could find them real quick and tell you, you wouldn't believe me, because that's how insane they are.
Wait, he did pitch like a D3 school, didn't he?
He did. Oh, wait, I found it. Here we go. If this loads very quickly, I can tell you what his numbers are here. In he went to Ferrum, which I could not even tell you where that is. He went to Ferrum
College. I think it's in Virginia.
Okay. And they have a list here of the best single season hits per nine in NCAA history. He owns the top three spots. 92 at Ferrum. He pitched 51 and a third innings. Do you know how many hits he gave up in 51 Four. And a third innings? Nine. 1.6 hits per nine. He's number two on the list. He is also number three on the list. Obviously, that does not make him a Hall of Famer, but it's very funny to me that you go put up numbers like that. I think he's going to get in. I'm maybe a little uncomfortable, as we talked about before, that he could be in as a closer and some of these starting pitchers like Tim Hudson and Jake Peavy won't, when in their day, nobody would have ever traded the like Cy Young quality starter for a good closer. But I've sort of come around to the fact that, you know, relief pitcher is a different position than pitcher, whether we want it to be or not, you know, and that's sort of the comparison I'm making.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But you could probably make a similar argument for, like, you know, someone like, you know, a DH only, like David Ortiz, as opposed to, like, you know, Andrew Jones. Like, if in 2005 they'd been offered straight up for each other, you probably say no if you're the Braves, because Jones is more valuable as like a defense first center fielder, not knowing what the future held, obviously, that David Ortiz would continue to be a dominant hitter for another 11 years or whatever. But like, I think that I'm with you. I've just come around the idea that like the relievers are kind of a different beast, so to speak. I think at least with Wagner, I appreciate because my biggest frustration with Hall of Fame voting has always been like the inconsistencies, right? And it's like, okay, like if you think Trevor Hoffman's a Hall of Famer, that's fine. But then like you really should think Billy Wagner's a Hall of Famer too. That's sort of my feeling. And this is kind of why I get stuck. And this is what I said when we talked about this a couple weeks ago, where it's like, if you think Scott Rolen's a Hall of Famer, like, okay. But like, I don't really see why there's a huge gap between Scott Rolen and Bobby Abreu, right? I just don't really. I guess, but like, you know, but just in terms of just like, you're also putting out your, I mean, yes, but like Bobby Bray was a better offensive player for most of his career, or at least for the peak of his career, or even fine. Andrew Jones, like, why is there a difference between Andrew Jones and Scott Rolen? Really, I don't really see why there's a huge gap between them. So I find it weird how some get more like somehow support gravitates toward certain players and not others. It's like, you know, at least with some players, you're like, okay, well, at least he had pizzazz, or he was cool or interesting. You know, Joe Posnanski wrote this week, like, you know, like Bobby Abreu is like the best boring player ever. And like, you know, he falls short for me, which is fine. But like, it's not like Scott Rolen was like this exciting, charismatic player either. He was pretty boring in his own right. So that's where some of those inconsistencies lie for me. Similarly, like if you thought Jack Morris was a Hall of Famer, how are you not voting for Andy Pettit, right? It's just these are the sort of the things that I don't really get.
I think part of it is you are talking about the guys who are, depending on how you choose to value them, between 7th and 13th on anyone's ballot, and you can only vote for 10, which is another huge flaw in the process. I think that would be a little bit different if you had the ability to vote for as many guys as you want. And we'll talk about that in a second. We'll take a quick break, and we'll talk about the near future, the upcoming Hall of Fame ballots in the next couple of years, and what happened this week could have an impact on them. We're back on the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. Mike Petriello and Matt Myers, we're talking about the Hall of Fame induction, David Ortiz joining the class of 2022. One of the most interesting things about what happened this year is that obviously Ortiz is inducted, so he's gone. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa and Curt Schilling have all aged off, right? They've all had their 10 years, whether you consider that rightly or wrongly. They are no longer eligible. They will not be on the ballot next year. That takes a ton of the oxygen out of the room, right? There were a lot of people who voted for 10 names, said they wanted to vote for more. There are a lot of people who voted for these guys who no longer have to worry about them next year. Who does that help? You know, I mean, it helps Roland in a little bit. It helps like Wagner, but I almost wonder if it helps some of the guys who are a little bit lower on the list. Like, for example, it feels to me like this helps Jeff Kent, right? Maybe it helps Bobby Abreu. It might help, you know, I guess it's not like you're either voting for Alex Rodriguez or you're not. It's not, you couldn't find room for him, right? But it does feel like there's a couple of guys who may get a little more support on their way. I don't know that Abreu is ever getting in, but like on their way to staying on the ballot for years to come. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think so. But I'm with you. I don't think Abreu, it's just, I don't think it's ever going to happen. And as I say this as an Abreu supporter, I'm not like, I wouldn't go to the mat for him. Kent, I think next year is his last year on the ballot. So like, I bet he'll see a bump, but I still think he's gonna falling, you know, well short. So I kind of feel like it's over him. I think someone like, you know, someone like Pettit is kind of interesting because he's got a few years left. And I think there is actually like, as I said on the last podcast, I think there's a real case you can build for him, especially given the dearth of starting pitchers from the modern era, like you know, sort of the recent era. So I think that like that's a guy where there could be a fairly compelling case for.
Yeah, there's two other things I want to talk about. The first is I just sort of looked ahead at like the next 6 or so years of potential Hall of Fame classes. Obviously, you don't know for sure like when current players will retire or whatever. I think you know, everybody worries about a shutout. I'm not that worried about that for the next 3 years, right? Like next season, you know, as we said, Scott Rowland's got a very good chance. Carlos Beltran will be on the ballot for the first time. I think he's probably going to make it. I don't know that he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer. In 2024, it's a really good one, right? Adrian Beltre, to me, is a slam dunk, no doubt about it. Maybe Chase Utley, maybe Joe Mauer. I'm not so sure about them. The next year, 2025, Ichiro comes on. I think Ichiro is a no doubt slam dunk kind of guy. I think CC Sabathia has a good shot. I don't know that he'll get in the first ballot. Pedroia maybe. 2026 is going to be weird because that would be guys who had their final season in 2020. And I don't think there were that many, like, you know, historically great players who showed up for 2 months and then went home. So that's going to be a weird one. And then after that, 2027 is guys who played their last season this past season. You know who that is? That's Buster Posey. Maybe Albert Pujols. We'll see what his career looks like. And then, you know, 2028 guys who will play their last game this upcoming season. Well, we know Yadi Molina is going to retire. He's already said so. So 2026 is going to be weird, but over the next 6 years, I'm confident in saying like at least five of those, you could almost guarantee at least one guy getting in. And I think that's a good one. And I'm not excited to talk about the Hall of Fame in 2026, but I think that's, if we're still doing this podcast, I think that might be a good time to take a nice long vacation.
We'll actually be voters at that point, I think. So, you know,
I will be. I don't think you'll be, right? I'm like 2 years ahead of you.
I gotta figure this out. Actually, I emailed our colleague Mark Feinstein about this morning, since he's, you know, been part of BBWA leadership, but how I can figure it out exactly, because I can't remember exactly what my first year was. So next year, next year is actually really interesting for a variety of reasons. Okay, so like this year, for example, the writers knew that even if they didn't elect anyone, there was still going to be a really robust class going in, because we already knew from the, what was it? Which was it? Golden Era Committee? I forget which one it was. That
I don't remember.
Oh, no, it was two committees, wasn't it? I forget. We already knew Gil Hodges, Jim Cott, Minnie Minoso, Buck O'Neill. Who am I forgetting?
Bud Fowler and Tony Oliva.
We're all going in. So like, no matter what, even if it's going to be a really big induction ceremony this year. Like I keep seeing these stories of like, oh, they voted someone in. I was like, no, we already had six people going in, six like real legends, you know, whether or not you think that they're like guys with real stories and big parts of baseball history. So like, it's a huge class. Next year is a tricky. Okay. And this is like, John Paul Morosi wrote about this on MLB.com today. So next year, the era committee is today's game, which is 1988 players who made their biggest impact from 1988 to the present. Lo and behold, who could be eligible for that? Well, that would be Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Curt Schilling and Sammy Sosa. However, the 10 player today's era ballot that is decided is decided by a separate committee, and they can decide. It's possible they will decide, you know what? We actually don't want to consider these guys again. Today's game committee is going to meet again in 2 years, in 2024. Why don't we just like take a breath on those guys? They just got considered 10 times, and let's give the other players of that generation a chance to sort of like be considered without this mess on the ballot. Cause like, as long as like, I think Bonds and Clemens and Schilling and Sosa are on the today's game committee ballot, it's going to be hard for anyone else to get in because they're going to suck up so much oxygen and they're going to be so divisive and take up votes on the committee. So like this could be the last chance for the likes of, you know, Kenny Lofton, David Cohn, Kevin Brown, Fred McGriff, Bernie Williams to get into the Hall of Fame to be considered. I think if they are considered without Bonds Clemens, one or two of them would have a chance of getting in. I want to talk about that in a second. But separately, what my point is also is the baseball writers will know by the time they cast their ballots if any of these guys have gone in. So when it comes time to decide whether or not they're going to vote for like Scott Rolen or Carlos Beltran or not, they're going to know, is it going to be zero people inducted in this summer if I don't vote for Scott Rolen? Or have we already selected to elect, you know, a McGriff or a Lofton or a Jim Edmonds? And you know what? I don't necessarily feel compelled to vote for someone because I'm not worried about there being literally zero people inducted next summer. Does that make sense?
That's really interesting. So there's a couple of things here. The first is that, you know, we can talk about all the players who might be on this list and we, you know, Bonds, Clemens, Schilling, Sosa, right? And then you mentioned some of the other ones like Lofton, Cohn. I think Fred McGriff is obvious. It's not just players, right? Bruce Bochy is almost certainly going to be on this list. Lou Piniella, I think. Felipe Alou. I think Joe West could possibly be there. George Steinbrenner. And the point is not like to try to identify right now who it should or shouldn't be, but there's a limit, right? And it's not just players. And when you get to the guys on the ballot, it's not an up-down vote for everybody. And this is what just cost Dick Allen. You know, there's 64 votes and you're only allowed to choose four guys, which is infuriating if you like more than four people. There's two different groups of people at play here. First is like who chooses who gets on this Today's Game era committee ballot. And Andrew Baggerly in The Athletic, he has the names. It's a historical overview committee of 11 senior writers, reporters and historians. And of the 11 names on this list, I have to, at least from my own point of view, they split pretty evenly into three groups. A few people I've never heard of, a few people I like very much, and one or two people, maybe the less said about the better. But if you, if you know the way that some of the people on this list approach things, they are never putting these guys on the ballot this year. There's no way Bonds and Clemens and Schilling are getting on the Today's Game. It's not going to happen. And then let's say they do. Right. Do you think that the players and, you know, historians and whomever has the vote this year, are they going to vote for those guys over, you know, some of their friends who they think were quote unquote clean, whether that's fair or not? Like, it's fun to think about, but there's just no way. And I go back to that by saying, yeah, everyone's mad at the writers and, you know, appropriately so. They're not going to get in on this ballot either. They're going to have an even worse time here. Like 2/3 of the writers just said, I think these guys are Hall of Famers. Despite the Hall of Fame changing the rules to make it harder for them to get in, they're not even going to get on this ballot, much less get in. So remember that when you're mad at the writers, also be mad at everybody else in like 11 months.
It would be really interesting though to see like how they are treated by some of the peers. Because when there's as you said, there's the committee of writers who decides who gets on this the 10-person Today's Game ballot. And then there's a separate committee of like former players and media members and like historians who actually have the vote. And some of them are like Hall of Famers. And in the past, there have been some Hall of Famers, some of like the old guard, a few of whom have passed away since then, but like who basically were like, I'm not showing up for induction if Barry Bonds ever gets in. Right.
Well, Joe Morgan sent that letter, remember?
Exactly. That's one of the people I'm thinking of. And I'm curious if that will remain, but I think what's more likely is they keep doing the Today's Game thing, you know, every 2 or 3 years, and then, you know, 15, 20 years down the line, sort of the tides have turned and there's a new generation of players and voters and historians who are making these decisions. And that's going to be the point where like Bonds and Clemens get in. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm with you.
No, I don't think so either. Like I said, it's very fun to think that they could just like turn around and get inducted in a couple of months. They're not even going to be on the ballot. The whole thing is infuriating. Like I'm annoyed at the writers. I'm annoyed at the Hall of Fame for actively making sure that they couldn't get in. I'm annoyed at the players for doing things that made them, you know, less appealing. And yeah, as I said at the beginning, I still love the Hall of Fame process anyway, which I'm not sure what that says about me. That'll do it for this week's podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening to the Ballpark Dimensions podcast. We will see you next time.